Hello, hello. Welcome back to the P2P Soapbox. I'm your host and P2P BFF, Marcy Maxwell. As many of you know, we just wrapped our annual Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum conference, and we had an amazing slate of speakers. So over the next few episodes, we will be bringing on some of the most in-demand topics and presenters from the conference to join me on the pod. So get ready. Speaking of the conference, I have been attending for years, and I vividly remember a presentation definitely more than 10 years ago when the Alzheimer's Association first introduced their new mission element for the Walk to End Alzheimer's program, the Flower Garden. As someone who has lost both grandmothers to Alzheimer's, it felt like the perfect mission element for me. A way to signify my connection to the cause, to honor my loved ones, and something I could take home after the event. Since then, I have spent countless hours in many meetings trying to figure out the flower, I'm using air quotes, for the various programs that I have managed. It seems obvious that our peer-to-peer fundraising events would be designed with the organization's missions in mind. However, when you're also dealing with critical logistics decisions, competing messaging priorities, and the influence of one too many cooks in the kitchen, it can be really easy for a mission-centric approach like this to take a back seat. So I am excited to be joined today by a duo who is taking this mission-first strategy to heart, Jesse Ames and Kyle Houlihan of Cure SMA. Cure SMA provides support for people impacted by spinal muscular atrophy, advocating for their needs and funding comprehensive research that is driving breakthroughs in treatment. Walk and Roll is Cure SMA's largest event dedicated to fundraising and awareness for the SMA community and is held annually in 40 plus communities nationwide. And Jesse and Kyle are the driving force behind it, serving as the Vice President of Development and Events and the Director of Development Events, respectively. They both bring extensive experience as participants and frontline fundraisers to their roles. So during our conversation, we're going to dig into the importance of leading with a mission-first strategy. Kyle and Jesse will share how their team is expanding the Walk and Roll community by engaging direct mission providers. And they're also going to tell the story of how they launched a new on-site mission experience, their version of the flower, and what they learned from it. Plus, Jesse will share how the SMA community is changing thanks to research funded through peer-to-peer and how they are evolving the program to meet the needs and share the stories of the full SMA community. So let's jump right in to my conversation with Cure SMA's Jesse Ames and Kyle Houlihan. Jesse and Kyle, welcome to the podcast. So happy to have you.
Hi, Marcy. Happy to be here. Yes, we're excited to be here. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know I kind of started off in our introduction telling people a little bit about the two of you, but I always like to start with just hearing it from you. So can you tell us a little bit about just your personal journey, your professional journey that led you to your current roles at Cure SMA? Jesse, why don't you start?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So my professional journey actually started with my personal journey. And my first foray into fundraising was actually Relay for Life. When I was a teenager, my grandmother was diagnosed with cancer. And we were from a small town in Iowa. And that was, you know, kind of the thing to do. And at that time, we got involved with ACS. And that was when I first kind of really learned about fundraising and really the impact that it could have. And fast forward to college, I was in the School of Communication at Loyola University, and part of the conference to actually graduate, you had to do an internship. And so I applied for an internship at the National MS Society, Greater Illinois Chapter, And I started there in their Walk MS team. And so I was there for about 3 years interning, and I was bouncing around between departments, really learning just the ins and outs of nonprofit world. And then fast forward to about 4 years ago, I was approached for a position at Cure SMA by a former colleague that I'd actually worked with at the MS Society about a new opportunity at Cure SMA. At the time, I hadn't even really heard of what SMA was because it's a rare disease and wasn't too familiar with it, but I knew that I was ready for the next step in my journey and was so excited to be able to come on board here at Cure SMA. And then just recently, within the last year, I was promoted to Vice President of Development. And now I have the privilege of being able to work with a phenomenal team, leading strategy and execution on all things development and fundraising here at Cure SMA. So that's a little bit about my journey.
Awesome. Kyle, what about you?
So it's really similar to Jesse's start with all things nonprofit as well. So I first took part in Relay for Life when I was 11. I was bad at sports and wanted something to do after school every day. And so I found my town's Relay for Life and kind of knew from there that that's how I wanted to spend my life. So I've ever since been really passionate about walks when I was in school, still participated in Relay for Life and knew that when I left, I wanted to do that for my living. And so I started as a part-time development assistant for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation right after graduating, and then grew into an endurance manager there, working on their team challenge program, which then quickly turned into a walk manager for Take Steps. I was there for a few years before heading to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. So I worked on Light the Night for a few years, including our virtual event year, which was a fun transition. And then a former colleague from LLS actually similarly talked to me about coming to Cure SMA. And I have been here for 3 years. I currently work very closely with a lot of our peer-to-peer initiatives, including Walk and Roll.
I always love, we jokingly call it the very incestuous world of peer-to-peer. So many people that have worked together at different organizations through the years. So thank you both for sharing that. You know, Jesse, you mentioned that you really weren't familiar with SMA when you first took the role. So for our listeners who also may not be familiar, can one of you share a little bit about both the disease as well as the Walk and Roll program and kind of even how it's evolved over the past 25 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, similar to Jesse and so many folks, SMA is a rare disease. And so oftentimes it's not heard of until you encounter it. So if you don't know, SMA stands for spinal muscular atrophy. Essentially, it's a neuromuscular disease that can take away a person's ability to perhaps walk independently, in most extreme cases, breathe independently. And so for anyone who's not familiar, this is actually Cure SMA's 40th anniversary. And so 40 years, families have been working on the front lines to make sure that life could look different for future folks who are diagnosed with SMA. And it really does look different now than what it used to look like. There was a time where a diagnosis was a bit of a tougher conversation where families were told to go home, spend time with their child, and give them a lot of love. And fast forward to now, we have three really amazing treatments that are truly life-changing for folks and families who are impacted. And so what we've seen then is how that impacts the work that we do, and primarily through Walk and Roll specifically. So Walk and Roll was started 25 years ago, and it started kind of in a grassroots style. So events would slowly pop up in communities across the country. With a lot of rare diseases, community members are often connected regardless of geographic location to each other. And so families in one area would be friends with families in another, and they'd spread the word about what they were doing, and other families would want to get these started. And so across our 25-year history, we had a lot of events start that way. A lot of the events were historically started for like an individual. So it would be like the Walk and Roll for Kyle. And then that it would evolve to grow more for the community. And then bring us to today, we've seen those wonderful treatments and progresses that we've seen for the community. And a lot of the work that Jesse and I have been able to do is make sure our events are a reflection of where we're at now. And so making sure that the experience that someone who attends a walk-in-roll event in 2024 is reflective to all the diversity that exists within SMA now, the different life experiences, so folks can still be involved in Cure SMA no matter of when their diagnosis was.
So you both mentioned in our prep conversation that you joined the Cure SMA team right as events were coming back out post-pandemic. So very unique challenge that all of our listeners dealt with, not only dealing with the pandemic personally, but how that truly affects your work when you work in the event space. And I know that you both said you immediately saw opportunities to better really leverage the organization's mission to engage the community. So Jesse, can you tell us a little bit, like, what was that initial assessment when you walked in the door and kind of what have been some of the first steps that the team has taken to really kind of ignite the community based around your mission?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And, you know, obviously the pandemic was less than ideal in so many ways, but I think as an organization, we really took that time while we were kind of at a standstill to really assess where we were at as an organization with respect to all of our programs. And as, you know, restrictions kind of started to lift and events were slow but steady and starting to return, we were able to really kind of start that assessment in real time with our actual events and event organizers. And I think one of the most interesting things that we did is we had meetings and listening sessions with our committees and chapter leads to first really assess the level of comfortability that they had with bringing back their in-person events. And then really to use that information that we got to really glean, like, where are we at as a whole with this program, right? So, you know, to Kyle's earlier point, you know, this program really started in a grassroots fashion, and it was really that connectivity among our families and our community that really drove the inception of this program. But as such, we didn't have that true kind of programmatic brand consistency across the program. So you might have one event that is named in honor of somebody. You might have one event that is named after the location that it's in. And we really kind of saw as we were looking at this, just the program really running the gamut as far as the way that it looked. And that also rang true in the program experience, right? And that was something that, you know, Kyle and I really wanted to make a concerted effort on to change, was how are we ensuring that if somebody attends a walk in San Diego and then somebody attends a walk in New York City, that they're having, at the very least, a very similar experience at both events. And at Current, we didn't have that. And it was for a number of different reasons, right? But I think the first thing that we had to do was really make that kind of critical assessment and find out kind of where we were at. And that involved those listening sessions, those meetings, those in-person attendance at the events for events that we hadn't been able to see since we started, which was a challenge in and of itself, right? To navigate kind of rebranding a program when you've never actually been at an event. So that was something that was interesting that we really had to work through. One of the things that we also recognize is that the program itself, like, while it had a true legacy to it, there was an opportunity for us to really enhance the consistency of the brand, right, for the program. Each year, we had kind of recognized that the branding was kind of changing for the program, and that for example, the logo on all the t-shirts each year would change. And that was something that we recognized as an opportunity. Like, we can really kind of refine this and kind of clean it up just a little bit, that will make that minor change to what our committees and events are used to seeing, but will in the long run make a tremendous impact on the awareness and recognition of the program itself. So we really focused on the branding and kind of really started to bring that in under the Cure SMA umbrella. And then in turn, there were a lot of things that just kind of spiraled from that, right? So I think a lot of the listeners are probably used to just the notion that fundraising t-shirts are big in our industry as far as meeting fundraising minimums, right? And at Cure SMA, before Kyle and I came on board, our attendees and participants could actually buy their shirts. So they weren't technically fundraising to meet a minimum, right? And so when Kyle and I first kind of saw this coming from our backgrounds that we're in, we recognized another opportunity to really dig into the data and see, okay, we've got X amount of $0 fundraisers in this program right now, and we were hypothesizing because we're selling our t-shirts, right? And they're really important to our community. We have community members who have been walking or rolling with us for over 20 years, right? And so it's important to them that they get that shirt, but at what cost to the organization, right? So we really started to dig into that data and took a good hard look at, you know, our $0 fundraisers and what we could model the potentials if we took that away and put in a fundraising minimum for our participants to meet. And we really worked hard on coaching them to that fundraising minimum. And we saw a pretty big lift in year one. So that would have been 2022. And then again in 2023, I think our fundraising averages per participant went from right around like $99 up to almost $300 in 2 years. Just from making that shift, right? And for so many out there, that may seem, you know, so obvious, right? But for us as an organization, it was just something that we had never done. And Kyle and I knew that that was the big thing that we kind of had to pull the lever on. And we took that opportunity coming out of the pandemic to make that change, and also worked with our event committees and chairs to help them understand why we were making that change. We showed them the impact of what these additional dollars are going to do for the organization and ultimately for the community. And really that's what drove it home when they understood the impact that this change was going to make. Because change is hard, right? Change is hard for everybody. But when you can show people what that change is going to do long-term, that's where you can get the buy-in from everyone.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting where you're talking a lot about the branding, right? And what this looks like. And I have a very vivid memory kind of early on in my career where we were talking about a walk day event experience. And I said, yeah, we really need to bring the mission to life, the event. And they said, well, the logo's everywhere. And I was like, branding and mission aren't necessarily the same thing. So in addition to the branding work that you did to kind of pull everything under this consistent umbrella, the team also did a lot to say, how do we make sure this is kind of mission first, right? And that, again, seems like an obvious point, but is not always the driving factor with a lot of programs, is how do you really structure this to be mission first? So Kyle, can you talk a little bit about, I know you said you recognized kind of this opportunity to engage the Care Center Network as part of the program. So can you share, who that group is to you and why it was so critical to this kind of mission first approach? You know, how are you working with them? What does this look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And really choosing to partner more closely with the Care Center Network was one of those like, oh, of course moments, because it achieves exactly what you're talking about. It really brings that mission to life so much more at the event than any of the signage or strategic like programming moments we would have. This is something that brought additional life to it. And so for folks who aren't familiar, which may be a lot of you, the Cure SMA Care Center Network is a group of SMA care center providers across the United States that Cure SMA strategically partners with. We have 29 sites across the country, and many of those sites are in markets where we also have walk and rolls. And so that's where kind of that of course moment comes together, because of the community members that we're working with and who are attending our events. They want to see their doctors and their nurses at the events. And so we strategically partner with them by having a special kickoff call every spring with our care center sites to let them know of where we'll have walk and rolls this year, which sites have them, and how we're looking for them to be involved. Ideally, that involvement is by one, creating a team, and two, attending the event. That's really what the big ask behind it. We just launched this initiative in 2023, and we saw a lot more than what we asked for. Not only were the centers recruiting their staff, but they were also spreading the word about walk and roll to the patients attending clinic with them. And so it really helped to expand the reach of the program in those communities strategically. But then also, it was a great opportunity for patients who attended the event to see their providers there with them. We heard so much, oh my gosh, that's my doctor at the walk and roll, which is exactly what we want to see. But also, as a leveraging point, that expressing that further, it was good for us to have that experience to then push harder for more folks and more care centers to be involved, because their presence or lack of presence is also noticed.
Yeah, I think for a while, it felt like, sometimes it felt like there was a hard line, right? There was the, we don't ever want to approach, you know, our medical staff, our faculty, our care center about fundraising, right? It was a dirty word. And I think what I've seen is this realization that these walk programs or cycling programs or run programs, like there's a level of like emotional healing that happens with the community, with the relationship that can happen. And the doctors are even more a part of that than, frankly, the fundraising staff, right? Like the closer relationship that a patient might have is going to be with their doctor or their nurse than the person from the charity. And that's okay. Like that's as it should be, right? So how do we bring them in to the community? Jesse, what would you add to kind of how y'all have approached this element?
Yeah, I think it's just so, you know, timely that you mentioned that, because we were actually just talking about this yesterday, right? Because as we were thinking about, you know, our partnership with our care center network and how we look to continue expanding it for the future. And when you think about it, to your point, Marcy, like clinicians and doctors, they're often the first entry point into the world or the reality of SMA for our community. And so to the notion of like, you know, they're probably closer with their doctor or treatment provider or clinician than they are with the charity themselves. Like that is a probable fact, right? And that's a reality as organizations that we need to face and recognize, so that we can then work on how are we frankly capitalizing on that partnership? How are we ensuring that our community who is tapping into our clinicians that we partner with, well-versed and understood in all of the different areas of our organization that we have to offer them as far as support, you know, advocacy engagement, the like, you know, how do we ensure that they are aware of everything that's going on? And that was one of, you know, our first sort of forays into this partnership, was thinking about from a fundraising perspective, not necessarily from the raising of funds, right? I mean, of course, that's great, but we really look at walk and roll as kind of the gateway to our organization outside of that first touch point with your SMA clinician. And so it's so important for us that we're building that sense of community at our walk and roll events, and that opportunity for engagement with other folks who have or continue to go through a similar experience that you're going through. And so that was one of the main reasons why we knew it was so important to really partner and tap into our Care SMA Care Center Network teams, because they have that first touch point and they're the ones that are, you know, boots on the ground when sometimes we can't be as an organization. And I think one of the critical things in this, you know, partnership that's so important is the internal work that you do within your organization. You know, one of the biggest things, you know, coming off of the peer-to-peer conference that we were just at last month, is that sense of collaboration, right? And that's something that I feel like at Cure SMA we do very well. Obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement, but we're making great strides as an organization. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I could, you know, pieces of advice that I could share with other orgs is remember to collaborate across department lines, not just with marketing, but with research, with clinical care, with advocacy, with your community support and programs teams. Being well-rounded in all of those areas, it's only going to make your fundraising stronger, because at the end of the day, you're there to support the mission. And so Kyle did a phenomenal job of partnering with our clinical care team because they're the ones that communicate with our clinicians. So if we don't get the buy-in from them, then it's kind of a moot point, right? Fortunately, we have an incredible clinical care team internally who recognizes and understands the value of development and fundraising and how it ultimately fuels the mission of the organization. And so both our development teams and our clinical care teams worked really well together last year to kind of kick off what was this inception or pilot program partnership. And it's continuing to, you know, candidly explode into this year. And I'm really excited to see like what's going to happen in 2024 as we continue to push that and really work to engage all of our clinical care sites across the country.
So speaking of things you've piloted, right? I know one of the, I feel like one of the most talked about things in kind of the walk experience space is, you know, what's our iconic moment, right? What's this iconic element that we're going to be remembered for? And one of the things that the Walk and Roll program has is the Pinwheels of Promise. So can you just tell us about kind of what does this program look like? How did it start? What have you learned from kind of your first implementation? How is it growing? So tell us about the Pinwheels of Promise.
Well, we've learned a lot. Let's start with that. Just because that's the nature of most things we're doing. With this program, there's a lot of testing and trying, and Pinwheels of Program is no exception. Pinwheels of Promise is no exception to that. So we took our first season of getting back into the world of events in fall of 2021 was really when we started to get back into them. Some of them were virtual, some of them were hybrid, but we took that opportunity to kind of really dig deeper into our communities. And we noticed that, like Jesse said before, there was not a lot of consistency across the event space, but also there was a lot of variety and diversity of experience with SMA itself. Like I mentioned earlier, we have three treatments now. They started emerging in 2016 at the end of the year. And so for our program, which is 25 years old, there's families who've been involved that long. And so they were around before those treatments, and their experience with SMA is very different than someone who has been more recently diagnosed. And so we wanted to make sure we honored both of those experiences at our events. And so we came up with the Pinwheels of Promise program, and thankfully we piloted it in the spring of 2022 at a few sites. And so what it initially was we would have physical pinwheels at our sites where everyone who attended would receive a pinwheel in one of three colors indicating their connection to SMA. So one color was for folks who had SMA, one color was for folks who participated in memory of someone they lost to SMA, and one was for folks who were there for someone they cared about with SMA. And it really went poorly, to be honest with you, the first time. It was not good.
I love the candor.
And there were physical pinwheels. And so every event space, we have 40 plus events across the country, would be very different. And so getting the pinwheels to stand on their own did not really work. We had clips that we designed on our own for folks who were in a wheelchair to be able to attach it to their chair. And it just felt very not great. And so we pulled the pilot and knew like, this is not working, but there is something to this. And so we have an annual conference at Disney every year. And I don't know for anyone listening who's really into the world of Disney, but this was my first exposure to it. Disney has this great pin exchange program where you can exchange lapel pins in all these different designs and styles. And I was watching only my coworkers like fight each other over these pinwheels. And I was like, maybe there's something to this. And so we kind of adapted that experience that our community already has with the Pinwheels of Promise. And so what were blue pinwheels then turned into lapel pins of a pinwheel in those same styles, which is definitely a better match for our community because everyone can just wear one. But also, we're a small team. And so this is something that we can easily transport from site to site. Plus, it's something that now is commemorative. So every year there will be a new pinwheel. And so for us, it just made a lot of sense because when we went away with that, with our fundraising fee for a t-shirt, and instead now it's a fundraising fee, but before it was a registration fee for a t-shirt, this is now something that everyone who attends the event gets and so then can take with them and continue to get a new one every year. That's kind of the evolution of it and where we stand now.
Yeah. Well, I love that it extends, the life extends beyond the event, right? I mean, the amount of time I have spent in my career in peer-to-peer trying to figure out what is that thing, right? What is it? You know, is it a flower? Is it a flag? Is it a pinwheel? Is it a lantern? Whatever. Whatever it is, I think the ones that are most successful are the ones that are, you know, very visible, right? Can't be something that's hidden, and something that frankly can extend beyond the event itself, you know? So I imagine there are people that stays on a suit jacket, or that stays near the refrigerator, or on, you know, the bag that they carry to work every day, whatever it is. And it becomes that constant reminder of their connection to the event. And so I think I like the idea. Not that I think the regular pinwheels don't sound amazing. I think that sounds like a great pivot.
And it's great too, because now that we know that our community loved the idea so much after we came back with this kind of second iteration, it's something that we then this year decided, okay, this is going to be something that's commemorative and people can collect year over year. And if there's one thing that we have learned about our community that we love, is that they love like the commemorative pieces that we offer, or that they earn through their fundraising efforts. And so this just feels like another special way to be able to recognize everybody's experience at the walk, which is great. And there's one other thing too that I really wanted to mention as well, like, and you kind of touched on this, Marcy, is just, you know, I think sometimes as organizations, we kind of get maybe a little set in our ways, or we get a little afraid to take risks. And I think it's important to remember that it's okay to take calculated low risk ideas and put them into action and not be afraid to fail. And this was, at the time, it seemed like a little bit of a crazy idea. And it was something that was different than what we'd ever done as an organization. And thankfully, we simply piloted it. But that was part of the conversation, right? It's like, okay, we're not going to roll this out to all 40 walks just yet. Let's see how these first couple do at the beginning of the season, and then we'll iterate on it. But I think that's something that I really kind of wanted to just drive home as another takeaway, is just like, don't be afraid to try something new and pilot something at one or two sites and see how it goes. And even if it flops or it's a big failure, then, you know, learn from it and iterate on it. And it doesn't mean that the idea is bad or that you can't take pieces away from it and make something new from that. So I kind of wanted to just add on to that, because that was something that was I think a key takeaway for some people at, you know, conference and talking with some people after, you know, our session that we shared.
So speaking of the conference, so I was really inspired, Jesse, by a specific story or kind of anecdote that you shared, specifically that thanks to kind of the research and the services that are funded by Walk and Roll, that children diagnosed with SMA are living longer lives. And because of that, the program is needing to evolve to meet the needs of this population with a longer life expectancy, which is the best problem to have, yeah, right?
It really is.
How can you talk us a little bit more about that? And, you know, how is this shaping your storytelling about the benefits of fundraising for Walk and Roll?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. It definitely is like the best problem, or like the greatest opportunity that I think like a fundraiser could really ask for when working on a program or at an organization. And I think, you know, something that was so like poignant to me was 2 years ago was our first conference back in person post pandemic. And we were at Disneyland, and one of the things that just resonated with me so much is the different variants and progression of SMA now with our community. And so you could, for instance, have a child or a teen who is maybe in a lay flat bed, and you could have another child who is a little bit younger, a couple years younger, who is in a wheelchair. And then you could have another child who's a couple years younger who is walking or running around. And you would never know that they have SMA. And that is the power and reality of what fundraising and our organization, which has been driven by, you know, the research that we've helped fund, in action. And you know, because of that progress and the powerful treatments that we have now, we've really had to, you know, really think about the way that we are also, we're also telling our story of the organization and our community, and also how we're ensuring our community is represented within our programs and feels seen. And it's not also, it's not just about the kids within our community, right? We're also seeing this continued age progression in our teen and adult audience, which is incredible. And that is something that we're also talking about, is how are we ensuring that our walk and roll program and events isn't just centered around kids, right? Because we have this diversity within our community, and we want to ensure that everybody feels seen and welcomed at our events. And so those are the continuing conversations that we have had as an organization and we've really been discussing over the last year. And one of the things that, you know, we continue to do is iterate on our community programs that we're offering now that we're seeing this aging population, which is incredible. And what are we doing to meet those needs first and foremost? And then how are we tying that back into our fundraising programs? So for instance, one of the things that we recently did within the last year is we launched a new adult support package, which focuses on the needs of our adult community. So for instance, it's a support package that we send out at the request of any adult within our community who kind of meets the specifications of the program. And in it, there's different tools that our community members have shared with us that have been impactful or helpful in their lives. So for instance, there's an Amazon Alexa in there. There might be some smart kind of plug-in devices or things like that that really help our adult community. And so we tie that into the program and really showcase, you know, how we're starting to shift the dynamics of where we're focusing our efforts as an organization to meet the total inclusive needs of our community. Because one of the core tenets of our organization is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if we're not walking that out in everything that we do, it's not just the branding, right? It's not just all of that. It's actually the action, right? And who we're serving and ensuring that we're meeting all of the unmet needs of our community, then we're not walking out our mission in its full entirety. And so that's something that we've really been focusing on as a development team specifically, but then also as an organization. And so that has really shaped the way that we also tell our story as an organization and how we're evolving to meet the needs of our community, and also the fact that we're aging, which is incredible. And is, you know, like we said at the top of the question, is one of the best problems to have for an organization.
Oh, well, Kyle, Jesse, this has been great. I know I've learned a lot. So I imagine there might be people out there thinking, this sounds great. How could I get more involved either, you know, as a participant, as a staff person? What does this look like? Where can we send them?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having us. Anybody who's looking for more interested can visit us at curesma.org. So that's curesma.org. And we actually have a fundraising event section right at the top, so you can't miss it. You can find all of our fundraising and development programs right there, or you can find us on socials at curesma.org.
Awesome. Well, thank y'all both so much for coming on and sharing about all of your great work.
Thanks, Marcy.
Thank you so much, Marcy. We've loved to be here.
The P2P Soapbox is produced in partnership with True Story FM. Engineering by Pete Wright. Music this week is by EFGR. If your podcast app allows ratings and reviews, we hope you'll consider doing just that for our show. But the best thing that you can do to support the P2P Soapbox is simply to share the show with a friend or colleague. Thank you for listening.